Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shavuos Daf Chof Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 6 lines from the top of Daf Chof Aleph. At the end of our previous shiur, so we gave a bit of an introduction to today's shiur. By all means, listen to our previous shiur, especially the last section of it, to appreciate what we're leading into. On the side, we have a nosei klali, a general topic heading. We indicate that this is to serve as an introduction until Ad Omid Beis. Biru Shitas Rabbi Avraham Rabbi Yochanan. We're going to be looking into clarifying the opinion of Rabbi Avraham, quoting Rabbi Yochanan. Bahagdoras Shvuas Achalti, or Lo Achalti. Kishvuas Sheker. Ubehemshich Gam Loikin Olov. We're going to be looking into the classification of a Shvua in the past tense as a Shvuas Sheker. And this, by the way, is in contrast to the approach we saw in our previous year as presented by Rav Dimi, that indicated the past tense Shvua as a Shvuas Shov. Here, we're going to see it presented as a Shvuas Sheker. And we'll also discuss the issue of there being lashing for it. The immediate topic at hand, nosei mivneh, ha-gemora mareh. The Gemara will show, after we learn Ravin quoting Rabbi Avo, who in turn quotes Rabbi Yochanan, Ravin, I should say, quotes Rabbi Yirmiyah, who quotes Rabbi Avo, quoting Rabbi Yochanan. The Gemara will show Hagmor Mareh the Masha Rabbi Yirmiyah Omar b'shem Rabbi Avo, the Rabbi Yochanan Omar Achati v'Lochati Shvo Sheker. That particular point that the past tense Shvua is categorized as Sheker Lav b'Feirush Itmar. It wasn't something stated explicitly. Ela Michlola Itmar. It was derived from something else. Yesh Litzayin, we want to point out, Sheba Malacha Gemara, Ikur Hadiyun, Iveris Lenoisim Loikin Olov. The main emphasis of the Gemara later will be on the topic of, is there lashing for one who lies concerning this past tense Shavua? So we have to keep a general mindset here, and that is, first we focus on classification of a past tense oath, and then the issue of lashing. Now to Gemara. Ki also Ravin. We're 6 lines from the top. Ki also Ravin Omer Rabbi Yirmiyah Omer Rabbi Yochanan Omer Rabbi Avo Omer Rabbi Yochanan Ochalti Velo Ochalti Sheker. And we, in our previous shir, we'll do it again now. You just have to, all you do is contrast this with what you saw on Daf Chof Amud Beis, Rav Dimi's presentation of Ochalti V'lo Ochalti. He presented it as a Shvuas Shov. And the major difference then will be, what is the Pasuk that governs the violation of a past tense shvua? According to Rav Dimi, it was lo sishos, lo sishos shem Hashem elokecha halashav. And according to Ravin, it's lo sishavu b'shmi lashoker. We continue. Ochal v'lo ochal. A person who swears in the future tense to either eat or not to eat something, and then he violates it. Over belo yachel devoro. That's, according to Ravin, the Torah's source for that kind of violation. Just to remind us ourselves, Rav Dimi explained that lo yachel devoro was a source for the violation of koinomos. We continue. V'e zohi shvuas shav. What is a shvuas shav? Nishba l'shanos es yadua la'adam. One who swears to alter through his words or to state something that is contrary to well-known or popular facts. Omar Rav Papa. And note, we have a very long point. Omar Rav Papa. How did Rabbi Avo? That which Rabbi Avo taught, and if you have any trouble finding Rabbi Avo, so you notice we have an arrow to the side of the Gemara text. You can align it with the arrow a few lines up, and we also dashed underline his name. Rav Papa says that which Rabbi Avo teaches, that ochalti v'lo ochalti, is categorized as sheker, as opposed to shov, lav b'feirush itmar, elo michlol itmar, noting, of course, Rabbi Avo quoted Rabbi Yochanan. So it wasn't something that Rabbi Avo heard explicitly from Rabbi Yochanan, but it was derived information. On the side, or we should say, in Rashi, v'hod Rabbi Avo, let's learn the Rashi together. Hod Omar Rabbi Yirmi Eliel, that which Rabbi Yirmi had said, Omar Rabbi Avo, Omar Mishmeid Rabbi Yochanan, Ochalti v'lo ochalti sheker, Lav beferushim Rabbi Avo b'hai lishna. It's not something that Rabbi Avo had said explicitly in that using that text. Elo mechlola itmar. It's something that Rabbi Yirmiya figured out through derived information. Deshame Rabbi Yirmiya, Rabbi Avo bechado milsa de ayriba Rabbi Yochanan b'shua sheker. Rabbi Yirmiya had heard Rabbi Avo regarding some topic, a particular point that Rabbi Yochanan had taught regarding Shvuah Sheker, the Ukma Rabbi Avo, and then Rabbi Avo took that information and ascribed it to Be'ochalti V'lo'ochalti. Me'ahu Klolo, from that general information, Amar Rabbi Yirmiyahu Mishum Rabbi Avo, Amar Rabbi Yochanan Ochalti V'lo'ochalti Sheker. So by piecing together some statement made by Rabbi Avo in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Yirmiyahu concluded that Rabbi Yochanan would say that Ochalti or Lo Ochalti is categorized as a Shvuah Sheker. And we get to that by going through this, we'll call the long point, and Rashi, if you study Rashi carefully, you'll notice he's very, very sensitive to structure, and Rashi points out that the climax of this long point is basically four lines from the end of our long point marking, where the Gemara says, Elam Rabbi Avo, Tehei Bachilasi, Bochalti, V'lo Achalti. Then in the meantime, we go through the Gemara. The Omar of Idi, Bar Ovin, Omar of Amram, Omar of Yitzhak, Omar of Yochanan. We dashed on Rabbi Yochanan because in the final analysis, he is really the center of our attention. We want to hear what did Rabbi Yochanan say that led Rabbi Avo and hence Rabbi Yirmiyahu to conclude that Ochalti v'lo ochalti is categorized as sheker. So what did Rabbi Yochanan say? Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Mishum, Rabbi Yosef Lili, Kol loisa seshebetara. When you're dealing with all negative commands in the Torah. And we want to speak about lashing. So it depends. Lav shiyesh boi maisa loikin olav. A negative command that's violated through an action. For example, the Torah says, do not eat unslaughtered meat. And you go ahead and eat it. So that you did an action violating the negative command of the Torah. That results in lashing. V'she'en bo'i ma'isa, ein lo'ikin olav. Someone who violates a negative command, and the violation is accomplished, but not through action. Might be through speech, for example, which is a non-action. So there's no malchus. Chutz, there are three exceptions mentioned here. Chutz mi nishba, umeimar, umakalol, es chavero b'shem. These three points are explained in greater length elsewhere in the Shas, but over here we're going to focus on the first nishba. False oaths. Meimar is a reference to Tmura, where one wrongfully attempts to replicate the sanctity of an animal onto another animal. And Makalo has to do with cursing, using the name of Hashem. These are non-actions. They're basically speech-oriented, and yet they do result in lashing. Nishba min olon. We've used a diamond to highlight the sources. On the side, we have under our tatnosei mivne, the sub-topic heading and structural note, that these are sources for l'nishba, for shvua shav and shvua sheker. So the first diamond highlights the source that there's lashing for a shvua shav. Nishba min olam, we continue in the Gemara, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochoi, Omer Kro, Lo Sisa, Es Shem Hashem Elokecha Lashov, Ki Lo Yenake. And we learn from here, Basin Shomalo Ein Menaka Noisoi, the heavenly court, which is represented here by the Pasuk says, Ki Lo Yenake Hashem, but we'll see explained at greater length in a few lines from now, but it's a reference to the heavenly court does not cleanse him from such a violation. Avol Basin Shelmato Malkin Oisoi Umenakin Oisoi. But the earthly court has jurisdiction over this, over the punishment. It can administer lashing, and through that cleanse him, Menakin, so cleanse him from his sin. Amalei Rav Popo Labaye Dilma Hochi Kamar Rachmona. Maybe the intention of the Torah is to say Lo Yenake Klal, that there is no cleansing for someone who violated a Shvuas Shav. So Abaye answers Iksiv Ki Lo Yenake Ki De Ko Amres. Had the Pesuk simply said Ki Lo Yenake, then it's as you said. However, Hashto Dichsiv Ki Lo Yenake Hashem. Hashem hu de'eino menakeh. The Torah is telling us that Hashem, the heavenly court, does not cleanse. In other words, the heavenly court does not initiate cleansing of someone who was guilty of a shvuas shav. Avol beisdin shelmata malkin oisoi umenakeh oso. But the earthly court can administer lashings and hence cleanse the offender. Ashkon Shvuas Shav. Up till now, we found a source for lashing for Shvuas Shav. Shvuas Sheker min olon. What is the source that a Shvuas Sheker also results in lashing if someone naturally he swore falsely? So Rabbi Yochanan Didei, Omar Rabbi Yochanan on his own. This, by the way, is in contrast to Rabbi Yochanan's appearance before, and that's why we have this dotted underline. Before, Rabbi Yochanan had quoted Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Here, Rabbi Yochanan is saying on his own, Omar Lashov Lashov Shtei Pa'amim. This is a reference to the Pasuk in Shmos Perek Chof, Pasuk Zion, from the Ten Commandments. We've included the Pasuk on the side of the Gemara. Let's read it briefly. On the side, Lo Sisa Hashem Hashem Elokecha Lashov, Ki lo yinake Hashem es asher yisoh es shmo lashov. You notice we've dashed underlined the word lashov, and you see the word appears twice. Why the repetition? So the Gemara continues. Im eino inyan l'shvua shav, if it's not necessary for shvua shav, teneo inyan l'shvuas sheker. It then will refer to the other kind of false oath, a shvuas sheker. And in this very pasuk, we learned that Ki lo yenakeh Hashem. Hashem doesn't menakeh, but Beis and Shelmata is menakeh through Lashon. So we would have a source then for lashing the Malkus for a Shvuas Sheker as well. The Havi Bo Rabbi Yavo. Havi is an expression when he asked, he questioned. Rabbi Yavo asked, Hi, Shvuas Sheker Hechidomi. The Shvuas Sheker that we're deriving from this Pasuk, what are the circumstances? And here you'll notice we have a house marking, and on the side, under our Nosei heading, Hemshech, we're continuing the topic and the Mivneh, the structural note, Shlavim Levarer Hechi Domi Shvuas Sheker Shalokanov. We have to go through stages before we can understand what is the Shvuas Sheker for which there would be lashes. So what's the case? If you're going to say that the Shvuas Sheker is a future tense Shvuah, where he swears he will not eat, he violates it by eating. That's a standard negative command with an action. The Elah de Omar Shvua Sheochal Velo Ochal. So in the meantime, to suggest that the Shvua Sheker that the second Lashov is referring to is Shvua Shelo Ochal Velo Ochal, that's covered by another source, not this Pasuk. That's why the Gemara says, well, that's a case of a lav sheyesh bo maisa, which is learned, as we said before, from the smichus of the psukim dealing with losachsum shor b'disho, the prohibition of muzzling an ox while threshing, and the Torah's reference to Malkus. So the second suggestion is maybe the shvuah sheker that we're referring to here, that there's Malkus, is he swore to eat something, and his violation of it is through non-eating. Hai miloke, would that case result in Malkus altogether? It wouldn't. Why not? So that's what is discussed in the bracketed section. Let's skip the brackets for a moment. Elo Omer Rabbi Avo, Tehei Be'ochalti Velo Ochalti. The Shvuas Sheker, for which there will be Malkus, will be the case of Ochalti, where he swore he ate when he didn't, or he swore that he didn't eat when in fact he did. So it's at this point that we see that Rabbi Avo, who's coming to explain Rabbi Yochanan, says that Ochalti Velo Ochalti is a Shvuas Sheker, for which there will be Malkus. But what we see, by the way, is that Ochalti V'lo Ochalti is called Shvuas Sheker. And this was the basis of what we had said at the opening of today's shiur, the point to Aleph above, that Ochalti V'lo Ochalti is called Sheker. And this is all Rabbi Avo's explanation of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan, you can see in this form, did not say thusly explicitly. It's through Rabbi Avo's explanation of Rabbi Yochanan's teaching that Rabbi Yirmiyahu came to the conclusion that Rabbi Yochanan would hold that Ochalti V'lo Ochalti is an example of Shvuas Sheker. We'll get back to this again. Let's go over the bracketed section. In the bracketed section, we ruled out Shvuas Sheker that would have Malkus, the case of someone swearing to eat, and his violation is by not eating whatever. So as the Gemara says, hi mi loke, and now the bracketed section. The ha itmar shvua sha'ochal kikur zehayom. A person, let us say, swore to eat a particular loaf today. V'yovar hayoim v'lo ochlo. And the day went by, and he didn't eat it. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shlokish, Rabbi Chavaya, they both say Eino Loika. There's agreement on his exemption from lashing. It's true, he violated his words, but no lashing. Rabbi Yochanan Eino Loika, Mishim Behave Lav Shein Boi Maise. He doesn't get lashed because it's a negative command that's whose violation is with inaction. The cholav shein boi maisa ein loiken olav. All violations of negative commands that are not accompanied by an action, so he does not, one does not get lashing for it. For ishlokish amar ein oloke mishun dahavi hasra sofek. As far as Reish Lakish is concerned, the fact that there's no action, that is not in and of itself the basis of exemption. The basis of exemption is that you can't give a proper hasra. Hasra is the required warning announced to a person, the required warning that is given to a person who is about to commit an offense, and within the warning he is told that he will be subject to such and such a penalty. In this case, a person is told that if he violates what he's about to do, he will get lashed. The problem with this case, or the inability to give a proper warning, is that a proper warning demands it being stated within 2 seconds of the violation. We call that toch kevei dibor. Within the few seconds of after hearing the warning, the person would then go and commit the offense. That would be considered an effective warning. If there's any greater gap in time, so there's a possibility the person forgets. And an offense without proper warning, there is no lashing. Why, in this case of Shvur she'oichal kikar zu hayoyim, person swears that he's going to eat this loaf of bread today. Why is there no possibility of giving a proper hasra? Well, because it's a hasra sofek. And here Rashi explains a few. We're looking at Rashi. In a little more than halfway down the Rashi commentary, Hasra Sofek, Sofek im Yavor al Hasra im Lav. There is a doubt whether the person will actually violate the warning that he hears. Sheyochol Amar, person, let us say, vowed to eat this bread today. So how much time does he have to eat it? He has till the end of the day. So when I come up to a person like that and say, hey, you know, You better eat that bread before the end of the day. Person say, yeah, okay, fine. Thank you for the warning. I've got plenty of time. The person doesn't have the ability to time his warning that it should be like 2 or 3 seconds before the end of the day. At which point the person will then definitely be in violation of the vow, or of the oath to have eaten the bread. So since you can't time it so perfectly, any time, if you have a person that vowed to eat some bread, he'll always be able to say, rationalize, I've got time yet to eat it. And when the day finally goes by, whatever warning he would have heard, it wasn't within that 2 second time frame in which the warning would have had to have been given. So since there's this element of doubt, will he be in violation? There's a time element here. Will he be in violation of his oath or not? Warning is considered insufficient, and therefore, without proper warning, there can be no malchus. That's Reish Lakish's explanation of why this is not a good example of what the second lashov in the posuk, which was a reference to a shvua sheker, that would result in malchus. This case would not result in malchus. So we continue in the Gemara. Elo Amar Rav Yavo Tehei. The Shvua Sheker, over for which there will be Malkus, will be the following case. Be'achalti, ve'lo achalti. Either he swore that he had eaten and he didn't, or he swore that he did not eat when in fact he did. The Gemara asks, "Oh my shna, what is different about this case? This also, there's no maisa. Why in this case is there going to be malchus, and in the case of ochal, and he didn't eat, there is no malchus?" Omar Rava, Beferush Ribsotero Shvuas Sheker Doime Lashav. From the fact that Shvuas Sheker is referred to by using the word Lashav, we conclude Mashav Lishaavar, just like a Shvuas Shav, which we said before is Lishanis Yodua. Something that was already established as a piece of wood, and you come and swear that it's a piece of metal, that's trying to change that which has been already in the past established. Af sheker nami l'shavar. The example of sheker that the Torah is including with the second lashav word as deserving malchus is a sheker that's l'shavar, something past tense. So even though it's Ein Bo Maisa, nevertheless, it's through the scriptural inclusion, the Gezeiros HaKosov, we learn that Ochalti or Lo Ochalti, and he turns out to be lying, is worthy of lashing. It's at this point, then, the last four lines of the Gemara is where Rabbi Avo had said that Ochalti v'lo Ochalti is the example of the Shvuas Sheker that Rabbi Yochanan had alluded to when he said that the second Lashav comes to include a Shvuas Sheker for Malchus. So this is what was meant by the opening of this long point where we said Lav b'feirushit mar ela mechlolit mar. As you can see that Rabbi Avo did not say that Rabbi Yochanan had said Ochalti v'lo Ochalti is an example of a Shvuas Sheker. But it's through this discussion within Rabbi Yochanan that we came to this conclusion. And that's, once again, what the Gemara means when it says La befeirushit mar, wasn't said explicitly, but it was derived. On the side of the Gemara, we have a bow tie shape, Kushios al Rabbi Yirmiyah, Kushios shel Rabbi Yirmiyah al hodem Rabbi Avo. These are now going to be questions of Rabbi Yirmiyah regarding that which Rabbi Avo had said, the al ochalti v'lo ochalti loikin, that there is in fact malchus for that. Heora, we want to just make note. Hamasu matan beketaze mevuseses al diukim rabim besignan l'mute mai. The discussion in this Gemara is based on drawing inferences from the from various points or sources that are stated in the Gemara, where the Gemara says limute, that whatever was said is to the exclusion of something. Ubekach hasimunim hamufim kam hem kidei lahokil al malach ze shederish hashvo bein dvorim hanemorim kanu leilu shemufim ba'omid beis. We'll be circling the word limute in order to make it easier to follow or to contrast points mentioned here with points that are mentioned on Amud Beis, where again you'll see the use of the circling, and then we'll be able to navigate a little more efficiently. So now we continue with the Gemara, bearing in mind that we had up till this point we had heard in the name of Rabbi Avo that Ochalti or Lo Ochalti, and one lies about that, it will result in Malchus. Eisvei Rabbi Yirmiyah l'Rabbi Avo. Note that we have a long question. The source says Shvua Shelo Ochal Kikar Zu. Shvua Shelo Ochlena. Shvua Shelo Ochlena. Vi Ochla Eino Chayav Elo Achas. Person repeated three times that he is not going to eat this loaf. He swore that he's not going to eat this loaf. And then he went ahead and ate it. He's in violation of only one. In other words, even though there were three utterances of a shvuah, he's chayav only for one violation. Once he made the first shvuah, he's then bound. And his first shvuah was not to eat a particular loaf. So then he created a mitzvah, a personal mitzvah, not to eat that loaf. The subsequent vows are vows to fulfill the mitzvah that he created. That's called a shvuah l'kayim es ha-mitzvah. And a person who violates a shvuah l'kayim es ha-mitzvah is not guilty of a shvuah violation. And that when it comes to bringing sacrifices, he's going to be chayav only for one, for the initial vow violation. That's einu chayav elo achas. The Gemara continues, zu hi shvuas bitui shechayov malzveinu makis v'al shigosa korbanu levirate. Now, we have a very important expression, zuhi, which is a limitation expression. This is the example of a shuas bitui, of an uttered oath that, if violated knowingly, would be guilty of lashing. If inadvertently, be guilty bringing a korban oil of yorid, a korban, a sacrifice that's based on one's income level. If a person is a man of means, he'll bring an animal offering. If he's a person of less income, so he'll bring a bird offering. Now, but we read the source that said zuhi. There's an element of exclusion here. Zuhi lumutei mai. What is this coming to exclude? Lav lumutei. Is it not coming to exclude ochalti velo ochalti? The locking. The example in the source was an example that will lead to lashing. And that was a case where he swore in the future tense and he violated his oath by eating it. So that gets Malkus. What would not get Malkus? A person who swore in the past tense falsely, either Ochalti or Lo Ochalti, he would not get Malkus. Well, that would be against Rabbi Avo. Rabbi Avo said clearly that the case of Ochalti v'lochalti is what the Torah is including for Malkus. And here we see from this source, a Tanaic source, it would be excluded. Lo. We did not conclude things accurately. But rather, Limuti Ochalti v'lochalti mikorbon. The purpose of this source is to exclude from bringing a sacrifice in the case of an inadvertent violation the past tense oath. So that's the case that would... that's the point of exclusion. But we're not excluding ochalti v'lochalti from lashing. So with this, we're preserving Rabbi Avo. We have a bracketed section. If you skip it initially, you'll find how the reading is much easier. We didn't do it initially. Let's try it again. We're reading from the circle in the middle of the first wide line. We're saying here, lo, rather, lim'ute ochalti, v'lo ochalti mikorban. Skipping the brackets. Avo milkiloki, but there will be lashing. That's like Rabbi Avo. Now let's go over the Gemara again, but with the brackets. We're saying that the Tanaic source that featured a shvuah shelo ochal and he violates it by eating, that is chayev on it's chayev bezorda b'mezid malchus and b'shogei chayev a korban oil of yoreid, and the source is limute ochalti v'lo ochalti mikorban. The brackets, zuhi, the case of shelo ochal, the ochal, de'al shigigosa korban olivyore. In this case, there will be a sacrifice. depending, of course, on one's income level, that will determine the kind of sacrifice. Avol achalti velo achalti loy. But for the violation of an achalti, a past tense oath of either achalti or lo achalti, no korban. For Rabbi Shmuel he, and this unnamed Tanaic source is in accordance with Rabbi Shmuel, Amar eino chayov elo ale osud lavo. There's a machlokus between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva concerning what kind of shvua will generate the need for a sacrifice if violated inadvertently. Rabbi Yishmael is of the opinion that only for future tense oath violations will there be a sacrifice, not for past tense. And hence, when you say that the purpose of this source is to say that an ochalti or lo ochalti violation will not be obligated in a korban, the one who lied won't have to bring a korban. This is the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael that says korbanos are limited to future tense oath violations. And these points are all based on gzeros hakosas, they're based on psukim that we don't have to cite right now. Avol milka loki, but a violation of achalti v'lo achalti will result in malchus. That is in accordance with Rabbi Avol. We have some markings that we didn't speak about, but the diamonds that you see here are explained on the site. Havlotas shnei maskonas afuchos. We're going to be highlighting what appears to be contradictory conclusions. In the meantime, our first conclusion is that the source is in accordance with Rabbi Yishmael, that achalti v'lo achalti, no sacrifice. Let's continue. We're at the top of Amud Beis. Eima Seifa. We continue reading the end of the source. It says, Zuhi Shuas Shav Shechayovin al Zdoine Makis Val Shigigosa Potter. This Seifa is stated in conjunction with the Mishnah that describes the Shuas Shav as something that one says, L'shanas es yadua l'adam. Rashi cites the example, cites the source, where a person said regarding an omud shelevin, regarding a pillar of stone, that it's made of gold. And in this context, the source that we read at the top says, Zuhi shuas shov shechayoven al zdoine makis val shigosa poter. And again, we see the same structure, Zuhi limute mai, the limitation expression that here is a case of zdoinemakis, that for a knowing violation there will be lashing. In some other case there won't be malchus. My lav limute ochalti velo ochalti delo loki. Is it not so that this source is excluding the case of ochalti velo ochalti where there will be no malchus? And that is a question on Rabbi Avol. Lo, that's not the way to draw your conclusion, but rather, zu he, this case of shua shav is a case jal shigasa poter mi korban. The exclusion is with regard to the issue of the sacrifice. In this case, the shogeg, the inadvertent violation, will be exempt from a korban. Avol achalti velo achalti. Al shigigasa chayav korban. For Rabbi Akiva he. And the source is in accordance with Rabbi Akiva. De mechayev lishaovar kilahabo. That says that just like there's a sacrifice required for future type oath violations, there's a sacrifice required for past tense oath violations as well. So in reading the Seifa, bearing in mind that we quoted the Reisha, the first part of the source, when you read the Seifa, what conclusion do you reach? that Ochalti v'lochalti will be obligated in a korban, and that the source is in accordance with Rabbi Akiva. Take a moment to use the markings, contrast what conclusion we reached concerning the resha of the same source. What conclusion had we reached? That ochalti v'lo ochalti is exempt from a sacrifice. Do you see this? Two lines from the bottom of Omid Aleph, where ochalti v'lo ochalti will be exempt, being that it's taught in accordance with Rabbi Yishmael, that says korbanos are limited to future tense oath violations. So the Gemara asks, Ho Amris, but did we not say Reisha Rabbi Yishmael he? Use your arrow if you didn't notice before where we were quoting from. So Reisha Rabbi Yishmael v'Seifa Rabbi Akiva, should we conclude that we have one Tanaic source, the beginning of which is in accordance with Rabbi Yishmael, and the continuation of is all, automatically or all of a sudden switches to another author where the Seifa is Rabbi Akiva? That can't be. Rather, Kulo Rabbi Akiva. The entire source, Reisha and Seifa, is in accordance with Rabbi Akiva. But bear in mind, we still have to, in order to defend Rabbi Avo, we're going to have to learn this source in such a way that we don't come out concluding that Ochalti v'Ochalti will result in Malchus. So the Gemara goes on to say that the whole source is in accordance with Rabbi Akiva, and that the Reisha, which spoke about Shavua Shelo Ochal, Lavlim ute ochalti v'lo ochalti mikorba, really not coming to exclude the past tense oath violation from a sacrifice, because a past tense oath violation will also be obligated in a sacrifice. That's Shitas Rabbi Akiva. Elulim ute ochal v'lo ochal mimalkis. Avol korban mechayev. The purpose of the Reisha, which spoke about Zu, He, Shuazbita, etc., and so forth, that is coming to the exclusion of a person who swore to eat something and did not eat it. He will not get Malchus, but there will be a Korban. There will be a Korban. It's a violation of a future tense Shua, so there's a korban for that. But there will be no Malchus. So at this point then, we're choosing what the Reisha is coming to exclude. So what have we said then? It's coming to exclude the case of Ochal, where he swore to eat and did not eat, no Malchus. But Ochalti, and he swore that he ate and did not eat, there will be Malchus. Like Rabbi Avo said, Umay Shna. Well, what's the difference? Why is it that, how can you see so conclusively that in this source, the Reisha, which began with the example of Shvua Shelo Ochal, and he violates it by eating it, that the case of Ochal, and he violates it by non-eating, that will not get Malchus? How is it so clear? Answer, Mistabra. It's logical. Koi bilahabo. The source opened with an example of future. He said, Shvo shelo ochal. And I'm using that example and saying that in this case, there will be Malchus, where he violated it by eating, alluding to another case where there won't be Malchus. So when you are limiting or excluding, logic would have it that if you're dealing within the context of future, mimayit lahabo, you'll exclude something of a like nature, something of a future nature, namely the case of he swears to eat in the positive, and he violates it by not eating. However, to suggest koi b'lahabo mimayit l'sha'ovar, if the source features a future example where he swore that he will not eat in the future. And you want to say that that case, where the violation is through eating, there will be malchus. And some other case there won't be, would you think to go into another realm, into the past tense realm, and say that the case of a ochalti or lo ochalti will not get malchus? Why? Logic doesn't work like that. Logic says that when you're stating something with a limitation, and you want to discover what's being excluded, it's probably something within the same general category as we just explained. Before we continue, we glance at the side under our nosei, our topic heading, Birur Shitas Rabbi Akiva B'chol HaTorah. We want to analyze, clarify the opinion of Rabbi Akiva throughout the Torah, Lior Daitoi Shebishvus Odom Oiver B'mashu, in light of his opinion that we saw in the Mishnah, that a person, when he violates a shvua regarding eating matters, he violates it by eating even a mere morsel, as opposed to what we're used to in terms of shiurim, quantities. We often refer to the olive quantity. Eating forbidden foods, one is in violation of eating a forbidden food, we generally assume if he eats an olive quantity. What is Rabbi Akiva's opinion, though? This is what we want to focus on. He said in the Mishnah that if a person swears not to eat something, and he eats even a mere morsel of it, he has violated the Shvua. And with violating the Shvua, so of course, then there is the penalty of lashing. What does Rabbi Akiva hold regarding the rest of the Torah? Structurally, we have a long question, which is the opening of this section of Gemara. It's essentially an Aleph Oy Dilma Bay structure, where we give you two sides of analysis. We call it Aleph versus Bay's, and under the Mivneh heading, we've indicated thusly. And Aleph is as follows: B'chol HaTorah, Shari Surim, Rabbi Kiva Svirle K'Rabbi Shimon, D'chayev Malkis Al Mashehu. It could be, and this is what we're deliberating. Does Rabbi Akiva hold like Rabbi Shimon, who has a unique opinion, that throughout the Torah, when the Torah uses the word achila, uses the term eating, namely don't eat such and such, Rabbi Shimon holds that means a morsel. So is it so that Rabbi Akiva holds like Rabbi Shimon throughout the Torah, that there will be malchus, there will be lashing for a mere morsel of eating that which is forbidden? Oy dilma beis, and our note continues on the side, be'alma kirabonon sivirale. In general, Rabbi Kiva subscribes to the Rabbonon, the opinion of the Rabbonon that argue with Rabbi Shimon, the enu chayev ad shiocha kezayis, that a person is not in violation of the Torah precept of not eating forbidden foods until he eats an actual olive quantity. Rak b'shvuas chayev al mashehu, and only with regard to shvuas, to the topic of oaths, is there a possibility of malchus for a morsel, for a mashehu. Why? Hayol dim odem hayim afarish b'shvuas lo le'achol mashehu. If a person, let us say, swore explicitly, he swears not to eat a crumb of bread. If he eats the crumb, he's in violation of his oath. So gam b'nishba stam, yei chayev al mashu. Therefore, in the realm of oaths, by even the non-mention of a mere morsel could result in lashes. But once again, according to the Bay's possibility, Rabbi Kiva says mere morsel, but only in the realm of oaths. Now the Gemara. We turn to the Gemara text, note the long question, note also the Aleph and the O Dilma Beis, though, is quite a bit ways into the long question. There's a bracketed section, which is something that we'll skip initially, just to give you the feeling of ease of flow of Gemara reading. Ibayaloho, Rebbe Akiva, B'chol HaTorah Kula, K'Rabbi Shimon Svirele de Mechayev Mashu, does Rabbi Akiva hold regarding all Torah prohibitions, regardless of the issue of vows, all Torah eating prohibitions, that one will be in violation if he eats a mere morsel, skipping the brackets, Oy Dilma, Be'almo K'Rabbonan Svirele, or maybe in general, Rabbi Akiva holds with regard to other areas of prohibition, like the Rabbanan, that there is no violation for less than an olive quantity. V'hocha hainu taimo, here in the realm of Shavuos, the reason Rabbi Akiva says he's chayav for a mashu, hoil meforesh chayav, stam nami chayav, since if he were to explicitly vow not to eat a mere morsel, which by the way everyone would agree is if, upon eating the morsel one is in violation, Rabbi Akiva just goes one step further, but within Shavuos, to say that even a non-stated oath of morsel, namely he simply swears not to eat something, the mere morsel will constitute a violation. The logic behind that has to do with the fact that he made an oath. He vowed not to eat, and when a person says not to eat, so his intention, even without stating a mere morsel, might very well be any amount. Now we go back over the bracketed section. We asked, as far as Rabbi Akiva's opinion, does he hold in general like Rabbi Shimon? So where do we see Rabbi Shimon? Desanya. We're reading now within the bracketed section, Rabbi Shimon Oimer, Kol Shehu Lamakis. The penalty of lashing is given for even the violation in the amount of a mere morsel. V'lomru Kezayis, the whole concept of an olive quantity, Rabbi Shimon acknowledges there's such a thing as an actual quantity of an olive. Elo, that whole thing is stated le'inyan korban. With regard to those kind of violations that could lead to bringing a sacrifice, one would have to eat a full olive quantity inadvertently in order to be chayav a korban. This would be, for example, eating chaylev, the forbidden membranes or fats in an animal. They're called chaylev. If one inadvertently eats chaylev, so you'd have to bring a sacrifice. In such a case, you'd have to eat an olive quantity of chaylev in order to warrant the bringing of a sacrifice. But when you discuss the issue of knowing violation, intentional violation, which would result in lashing, there even if he eats a mere morsel, according to Rabbi Shimon, he would be liable to the lashings. The Gemara continues, Ubedinhu deboy iflugi v'almo. If you're going to say that Rabbi Akiva holds like Rabbi Shimon, namely that in all areas of halacha, lashing is given for a mere morsel, technically Rabbi Akiva should have stated his position in general with regard to other isurim as well. V'hai dekom miflugi hocha, and that which you find the machlokis Rabbi Akiva and the Rabbanan here regarding Shavuos, it's not that Rabbi Akiva is limited to Shavuos, but rather lahoidiach hakoichan de Rabbanan, it's here to show how far the Rabbanan go in their opinion. The afagav the ikol lemeimar, even though there is a certain logical stance that would say hayu umeforish chayav stam nami chayav, since if one would vow explicitly not to eat a mere morsel, he would be in violation, even without the statement of kol shehu, an oath taken not to eat, should also be violated by a mere morsel. Komash malon de patri, the Mishnah is emphasizing more the opinion of the Rabbanan to tell me that if he doesn't state a mashu explicitly, he merely vowed not to eat, he won't be in violation for less than a kezias. Just to repeat ourselves, even though there was a svara to say that the Rabbanan would acknowledge a violation of the shul even for a mere morsel, even not having mentioned kol shehu, But nevertheless, we're showing how far the Rabbanan go in their leniency, that there is no violation unless you state mashu, there's no violation in the oath for eating a mashu. O Dilma, or possibly, as far as Shitas Rabbi Akiva is concerned, Ba'almo Kirabonan Svirole, Rabbi Akiva will adopt the approach of the Rabbonan, not the approach of Rabbi Shimon regarding other Isurim, that there is no Chiyu for less than a Kezias, V'hocha Hainu Taima. And here, in the case of Shuas, the following is the reason for the Chiyu of Mashu. Hoyul Umeforesh Chayav. Since in oaths, if one explicitly restricts himself from eating a mere morsel, the eating of the mere morsel will result in violation. Stam nami chayav. Even without stating mere morsel in his oath, he would be in violation. But once again, according to the second approach, Rabbi Akiva mentions the idea of Oivar and Mashu, but only with regard to Shavuos. There's a Rashi that we'd like to look at. It's further down in the narrow lines of the Rashi. Oy Dilma, Stam Nami Chayev. Or it could be that Stam is also Chayev. The Stam Nami Kemeforesh Domi. If a person says, he swears not to eat, it could be it could include the mere morsel, even though he doesn't say it explicitly. Shedaito hoisal kolshu. His mindset was, when he said not to eat, was even on a mere morsel. So, at this point, we've presented the two possibilities. What is Shitas Rabbi Akiva? You'll notice we have triangles in our markings that appear in alternating directions. On the side, we have the triangle shape featured under our Mivne heading. And it says the Toshma with the point facing up, Hoichochois Kamo Beis. These are attempts to show like the Beis possibility, that Rabbi Kiva and his Din of Kolshi was limited to Shavuos, not something applying to the rest of the Torah. And the inverted triangle would be a dechia, a rejection. Now, the Gemara. Toshma, the Omru lo Rabbi Kiva. This is a quote from the Rabbonin in our Mishnah, where they said to Rabbi Kiva, Heichon motzinu ba'oichel kolshu chayav shezeh chayav. Where do we find the eating a kolshu results, a kolshu meaning a mere morsel, results in liability? That over here in the realm of Shavuos, there should be liability for a kolshu. So, by the tone of the Rabbonon, the way they're arguing, the method of argumentation here is, they're saying to Rabbi Kiva, listen, don't you agree that in the rest of the Torah you don't find Kol Shavuos Chayav? Now, Ve'im Esau, if approach Aleph were correct, Le'imolahu, let Rabbi Akiva say right back to the Rabbonon, what are you citing the rest of the Torah as if I agree with you? I hold like Rabbi Shimon with regard to the rest of the Torah, namely that all the time the violation of an eating violation would be with a mere morsel, and that would result in the lashing. Now, he didn't say that though. So apparently, Rabbi Kiva doesn't hold like Rabbi Shimon. He holds like the Rabbanan with regard to the rest of the Torah. So that's the point of this attempted proof. The Gemara rejects this. Not so. L'divrayim d'Rabbanan kamar lahu. What Rabbi Kiva was saying to the Rabbanan in the Mishnah, the argumentation there was Rabbi Kiva was talking to the Rabbanan on their terms. As follows, L'didi, as far as I personally am concerned, b'chol haTorah kulo k'Rabbi Shimon svirali. I hold like Rabbi Shimon regarding all prohibited eatings, that a mere morsel constitutes a violation. L'didchu, but according to you, Odulumiha, you who don't hold like Rabbi Shimon regarding the rest of the Torah, but at least you should concede to my position over here in Shavuos. Hayol umeforish chayev stam nami chayev. Since in Shavuos, if you were, and since in Shavuos, if you were to explicitly state an oath not to eat a mere morsel, he would be in violation. And that's something you agree with. So even if you don't state the mere morsel in your oath, you would also be in violation. The Amru le Rabbanon lo, and the Rabbanon say to Rabbi Akiva, no, we disagree. That, namely, that only in the case of Meforesh, where you specifically state a mere morsel, would you be in violation of eating the morsel. But if you don't specify that, you simply say Shvu Shelo Ochal, the violation is accomplished only when you eat a kezias. Well, let's try again. Toshma. Once again, we have a long marking, a long Toshma, which is an attempt to show that Rabbi Kiva, with regard to the rest of the Torah, would hold like the Rabbanan. So, you'll notice, by the way, if you just scan ahead, that the triangle does not appear anymore in an inverted fashion, indicating that this will be a conclusive proof to Rabbi Kiva holding like the Rabbanan with regard to the rest of the Torah. And only in the realm of Shavuos does Rabbi Kiva go further than the Rabbanan with regard to a mere morsel. In the case of Shvua, Shelo Ochal, even when you don't specify the mere morsel. Toshma, Rabbi Kiva Omer, Nozir Shishoro Pito B'yayin, V'yeshbo Kedei Litzarev Kezayas Chayev. Nozir is a person who vowed to abstain from wine products and a number of other halachas that apply. A Nozir who took his bread and soaked it in wine. So you have a piece of bread. In this case, we'll talk about a small piece of bread soaked in wine. And if you measure the wine and the bread, and you find altogether an olive quantity, in other words, you don't have an olive quantity of wine alone, but it's the wine absorbed together with the bread that you get an olive quantity, and a nozir would then eat that, he will be in violation of his Nazirus. There's a concept that we don't have to get into right now. It's discussed in other Gemaras, in Psochim, in Maseches Nozir, called Heter Mitztaref Le'isur, where that which is actually permissible, but it joins up with that which is prohibited to form a unit of prohibition. And that is the case of the bread being soaked in the wine. But what do we see here? Rabbi Kiva says that if the Nozir consumes bread soaked in wine, which altogether is a mere kezias, he is in violation of his Nazirus vow. If it were so, like the Aleph possibility that Rabbi Akiva holds, like Rabbi Shimon in general, Lomali Letzarev, why does the Nozir have to? Why do we have to describe the Nozir's violation only through Tziruf? And again, we're dealing here with Rabbi Akiva's Shita. Why would he have to, if he holds like Rabbi Shimon, why mention Tziruf joining up? You don't need joining up. You don't need the wine to join up with the bread. According to Rabbi Shimon, the Nozir would be in violation for a mere morsel of wine, a mere drop of wine, even without the presence of the bread. So it seems that Rabbi Akiva, who's interested in establishing a full kezias, is not following Rabbi Shimon's opinion. The Oid Tanan. We have another Tanaic source. A person vows, Shvu Shelo Ochal. He swears not to eat. V'yochal Nevelus Atreifus Shkotzim Rosim. And he eats some forbidden substance, like these different forms of prohibited meats and creatures. He's chayav a korban shvua. If he swore not to eat and he ate these forbidden things, he is chayav. He's in violation, resulting in the need to bring a sacrifice. Rabbi Shimon poter. Rabbi Shimon says he is exempt. Why is he exempt? Because he swore not to eat something that he was anyway prohibited in eating from the Torah. And swearing like that, swearing not to eat and he ends up eating something that he's prohibited in eating anyway, the Shvuah never covered that. Why not? It's called Mushpo V'Oymed Mehar Sinai. He's already bound by the giving of the Torah not to eat Nevela. Nevelos is unslaughtered meat. So if he swears not to eat, the oath doesn't cover that. So he's not in violation of the oath. And by the way, for eating unslaughtered meat, there is no sacrifice that's brought. For violation of an oath, a sacrifice would be brought. But the oath doesn't get off the ground if his violation of his oath is in this form where he's eating forbidden food. V'havinon bon, we ask, according to the Tanakhama, am I chayav? Why, if a person vowed not to eat, and he ends up eating something that's anyway prohibited, why is he chayav a korban? Why is he in violation of the Shvuah? Mushpo mehar Sinai hu, as we just explained within Rabbi Shimon, he's bound already from the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai. Let's skip the bracketed two lines momentarily. Fresh Lokish Omar, I ato moitse, elo, we'll skip the brackets again. Bistam, Vialiba, Rabbi Kiva. Notice we skipped a couple of sections. It's just to make the reading easier so that we get to the main point quickly. We'll go over the rest afterwards. Rish Lakish explains the Tanakhama who said that he's chayev upon eating the velos. The only way to explain that is a case of, as we said, he took an oath not to eat, and Bistam means he didn't mention any quantity, just swore not to eat, and in accordance with Rabbi Kiva, V'alibad Rabbi Kiva D'yomar, Odom Oyser Atzmo B'kol Shehu. A person can prohibit himself from eating. Prohibit himself means in terms of oaths, even if it concerns a Kol Shehu, a mere morsel. Now this idea of being prohibited from a mere morsel, and bear in mind we're talking about he ate a mere morsel of nevela, something prohibited that the Torah prohibits, namely the eating of nevelas. So what is meant here that a person imposes on himself the eating of a morsel of nevela? The Gemara continues, v'isalka daitach be'almak Rabbi Shimon svirale, if Rabbi Kiva subscribed to Rabbi Shimon regarding other prohibitions beyond oaths. Other prohibitions including Nevela and Trefa. If Rabbi Kiva were to hold like Rabbi Shimon, like the Aleph possibility mentioned above, Kol Shehunami Mushba V'Oymed Mehar Sinai Hu, even the mere morsel is something that he was pre-restricted, pre-bound from eating. Rabbi Shimon says that whenever the Torah speaks about not eating something, the Torah is referring to a morsel of it. So how could the vow that he takes, as featured in the source, how could the vow take effect on something that's previously prohibited by the Torah? Elolav shmamino. Rather, we must conclude from the fact that Rabbi Akiva, that fact that the Tanakhama here says that he is chayav a korban as a result of his personal oath, that in general, elalav shma mino be'almo kirabonon svirole shma mino. It must be that Rabbi Akiva holds like the Rabbonon, that in general, a mere morsel will not result in a violation, in a Torah violation. A mere morsel becomes a problem only when you vow. And only within vows does Rabbi Kiva say, you're chayav on a mashehu. So according to Reish Lakish, the Tanakhama is in effect a reflection of Rabbi Akiva, or a possible explanation, we'll say, of the Tanakhama according to Reish Lakish, is it is Shitas Rabbi Akiva, where he vowed Stam. He didn't mention Kolshu. He vowed not to eat, and in the realm of vows, the mere morsel is something that you're not mushpa the omeid mehar Sinai. It's only something that, as a result of the vow, becomes usser. And with that, we have shown that the opinion of Rabbi Akiva is limited to Shavuos, because when it came to something like Nazir, for example, Rabbi Akiva required a full kezias in order for there to be violation. Now, we skipped a number of phrases in presenting this Gemara, but what we accomplished is to focus the discussion around Shitas Rabbi Akiva, and we were able to do that only by focusing on Reish Lakish, who suggested as one of the possibilities of understanding the source of Shlushal Ochal, and he ate Nevelis and he ended up being Chayav, namely the Rabbonon, the Tanakam of that source, as being Rabbi Akiva. That we saw only by studying Reish Lakish. But now we have to go over the Gemara. We did skip a number of phrases. Source that we saw toward the end of the narrow lines in the Gemara was someone who swore not to eat, and he ate Nevelis Atreifus, and the Tanakhama says, Chayav, he's Chayav for violating his Shvua, even though he ate Nevelis Atreifus. And we asked, why is he Chayav? Is he not already bound from Har Sinai? And when you're bound, when you're pre-bound, so the Shvua that you made is irrelevant, and you would not be in violation of it? So now we continue on the last narrow line of the Gemara in the brackets. Rav Ushmuv, Rav Yochanan, three Rabbonan, three Amoroyim explain. Diamri Kulhu. The word Travayo that you see in the text is means two, but here you've got some more. You've got three. So they all say. In other words, that means that Rav Shmuel and Rav Yochanan, they say. Bekoleo dvarim hamutarim im dvarim huasurim. If you want to know, how can it be that by eating something that you're already usur in, that would be a violation of the vow? Is because when he swore not to eat shvushal ochal, he really swore not to eat mutter things as well as usur things. In other words, in the expression Shalo Ochal, he is including mutter things as well. Lo Ochal, he says, I'm not going to eat. Stam, what does that include? Well, he's not going to eat bread. He's not going to eat cheese. He's not going to eat kosher steak. And he's not going to eat Nevelis Atreifus. So by including everything together, since the Shavua certainly has meaning with regard to that which was otherwise mutter, so the shvua will include even that which is prohibited. So if you had stated a shvua, specifically shvua not to eat Nevelis and Treifus, and you went ahead and ate Nevelis and Treifus, you would not be in violation of the shvua, because you're mushva v'omim b'har Sinai. But he didn't specify only prohibited things. He said shvua shlo ochal, a general expression which includes heter things as well. And since it's called kolel, since he's including in his shvua mutter things, the shvua also takes hold with regard to the prohibited things. For Reish Lakish Omar, I ata moitse, you're not going to find the shvua taking hold with regard to Nevelis Atreifus, elo I b'meforesh chatzi shir v'aliba d'rabbanon. If he swore, let us say, not to eat a mere morsel of treifa. Now, from the Torah standpoint, according to the Rabbanon, a mere morsel is not prohibited. What makes it prohibited? His shvua. So you don't have a problem of his being pre-bound, pre-restricted. Therefore, the shvua could be, if he said explicitly, Shvu shol ochal mashu shel nevela, and he goes and eats a mashu of nevela, he'll be in a violation. Ibistam Valiba de Rabbi Kiva. And this is where we had to be interested, and we did this before. Another possibility of the oath taking hold and being the Tanakama holding guilty, it's because the Tanakama is according to the opinion of Rabbi Kiva, the Omar, Adam Oyser Atzam Bukalshu, that even Bistam means even without stating explicitly the Nati, a mere morsel, by saying Shelo Ochal, you mean a mere morsel as well. And then if you eat a mere morsel of the Nevela Trefa, you're in violation even without having specified mere morsel. If Rabbi Akiva holds in general, like Rabbi Shimon, that all the Isurim of the Torah are usur even to the tune of a mere morsel, he's already pre-bound from Sinai not to eat the mere morsel. How could then his personal shvua take effect? Elolav shma mino ba'almak rabbanon svirale shma mino. So from here we see that in general, Rabbi Kiva holds like the rabbanon that regarding other isurim in the Torah, like nevelas and treifas, shkotzim u'remosim, a mere morsel is not something you're prohibited in eating, and it's only because of the shvua that the mere morsel becomes prohibited. So this is conclusive that Rabbi Kiva holds like the Rabbanon and not like Rabbi Shimon. Omru lo le Rabbi Akiva, heichon motzinu. The Rabbanon said to Rabbi Akiva, where do we find ba'oichel kol shehu shezeh chayev? Again, this is the Dibur Maschil from the Mishnah. The Rabbanon who argued with Rabbi Kiva said, where do we find that the eating of a mere morsel results in a chiyuv, that you, Rabbi Kiva, say that for eating a mere morsel after having sworn not to eat results in a chiyuv? So through the eyes of the Rabbanon, it seems that you don't ever find the eating of a mere morsel as being chayav. In other words, there's no precedent for the eating of a mere morsel, unless you specify, but Rabbi Kiva said, even without specifying, you'd be in violation. So the Rabbanan say to Rabbi Kiva, where do you have a precedent for the eating of a mere morsel that you come to such a conclusion that by in the realm of Shuas, you'd be chayav for eating a mere morsel? The Gemara now asks, Velo, Vehare Nimala. You're going to see that we've dashed, underlined a series of questions that we ask. How can the Rabbanan say that you don't find any precedent for this idea? If a person eats a namola, namola is often translated as an ant. If a person eats an ant, a complete ant, that's far smaller than a kezias. It's far smaller than an olive quantity. A mere ant we can categorize as a mere morsel. It's a mashu. And everyone agrees, even the Rabbanan hold it, if you eat an ant, so you would be chayev for having violated the Torah. You'd be lashed for that. So the Gemara says, Bria shiny. Bria means a complete organism. A complete organism is something different. It's not an example of a mere morsel because of its completeness. But once again, we don't find elsewhere for eating a mere morsel of anything that you're chayev. The Gemara says, Vaharei hektish. Let's look at Rashi, four lines from the bottom. Vaharei hektish. Hektish is something that's been sanctified. Shehu mischayev mi'ila b'shova pruta v'filo bochs mikazayas. If a person derives personal benefit from something that's been sanctified, and the value of that benefit is pruta. Pruta is a very small denomination of currency. It has a certain value, very small value. But if you have that, if you derive that value of personal benefit from something that's been sanctified, you are chayav mila. Mila is the name of the sin of deriving personal benefit from items that are sanctified. And if that personal benefit to you is worth a pruta, even if it's less than a kezias, if you ate something that was sanctified, even if it's less than a kezias, you would be in violation. So here we have something that the Rabbanan themselves acknowledge as being chayav even less than a kezias, less than an olive quantity. The Gemara responds, this is not an example of something that has no quantity. Ha bo'in on shaveh pruta. In order to be in violation of hektish, of the sin called me'ilah, there is a quantity. It's not in terms of a kezias, but it's in terms of a shaveh pruta, in terms of a value amount. But not kol shehu. There has to be a minimum value. Question, v'harei meforesh. Well, what about the case of a shvua, an oath that someone takes, specifically stating that he will not eat a kol shehu? And then when he eats the kol shehu, when he eats the mere morsel, he's in violation. So there's precedent within the realm of oaths itself. Why then are the Rabbanan attacking Rabbi Akiva? The Gemara answers, meforesh nami kebriya domi. The case of Meforish is like Beria. The fact that you swore and specifically said in an explicit fashion not to eat a mere morsel of something, that is called achshavei, or you're machshavit. You're creating significance to something that otherwise wouldn't have had significance. But once you impose significance onto that morsel, it's like the case of a Beria. And we said, with regard to the ant, Beria is shiny. A Beria is different when you have something that's a complete entity, complete organism. The Gemara asks, Vahare Ofar. If a person swore not to eat dirt, Rashi at the bottom line says, Vahare Ofar, Hoi Meshvur Shaloi Chal Ofar. The Kosaka Daita for thinking right now is the cave of the La Barachila, since dirt is not something that's consumed anyway, Lo Shaykh Bo Be Shirachila. There's no quantity to speak of to begin with. The Chayav Bakoshu, so, and you're Chayav then for eating a grain of dirt. So that if a person swore not to eat dirt, there you have precedent. You have a precedent for eating a kol shehu. So why did the Rabbanon say to Rabbi Kiva, where is there any precedent for a violation through eating a mere morsel? Well, the case of Ofar represents that. Now, and if you're going to try to say that dirt is in fact bekezias, Elo, we continue at the top of Chof Beis Omid Aleph, Elo Tivshot Deboi Rova. If dirt was in fact Bekezias, then we would have been able to use this information to conclude a question that Rova once asked. Shvua, what is Rava's question? Deboi Rova, Tivshot Deboi Rova, Shvua Shelo Ochal Ofar, Vi Ochal Bekamo. A person swore not to eat dirt, and he ate dirt. How much would he have to eat in order to be in violation? Tifshot Adi Kazayas. You would have been able to conclude to respond to his question by saying you'd have to have a Kazayas. Now, we didn't answer his question by saying that. So it must be that Ofar, in fact, is Chayav even Bemashehu. If that's the case, then why did the Rabbanan say to Rabbi Kiva, there's no precedent for the eating of Amashahu that results in Chiyuv, when in fact there is? The Gemara responds, it could very well be that Ofar is Chayav Amashahu, but Ki Ko'amrinon, the Rabbanan, when they argued against Rabbi Kiva, B'midi Debarachilo Ko'amrinon, they were talking to Rabbi Kiva within the realm of things that are edible. We don't find in the realm of things that are edible a chiyuv at less than a kezias. Even though Ofar is true, could be chayav bekoshu, but that's not what the Rabbanan were interested in when they were arguing against Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara asks, "Vare koinamois." If a person, let us say, says koinam kikur zualai, koinam is an expression; it's a vow whereby he restricts something. In this case, he restricts bread upon himself. He restricts a specific loaf of bread on himself. And we know, and this is something that we haven't seen yet in the Gemara, but we know that a person for eating an item that he prohibited through konam will be in violation even if he eats a kol shehu. So konamos represents a precedent for a chiyu, for a violation even on a kol shehu. The Gemara rejects this. Konamos nami kemeforesh domi. Konamos is like specifying a mere morsel. Konamos is an example, as we said, a type of vow. So it's like vowing, specifically saying a mere morsel. But he doesn't actually say that a mere morsel is usur, but it's like that. Why is that? Rashi explains, because when you say koinam kikur zualai, you don't use the word achila. The word achila implies a kezias. But where you don't use the word achila, so that's true. Then a kolshu is figures in. However, we're talking about a person who says shvu shelo ochal. He uses the word achila, and even so, Rabbi Kiva says for eating a kol shehu, one would be chayev. And it's in response to that that the Rabbanon say, where do you find precedent for the eating of something that's a bar achila and be in violation for a kol shehu? Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.